You are listening now to the Mendocino Country Independent Hour. It's a monthly newspaper put out locally and covering issues throughout Mendocino County. So this evening we're really lucky. We have a vet for peace with us, Sanderson Hill, who I prefer to call Sandy Hill because it has a nice geographic ring to it. Yeah, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be here.
Great. The Vets for Peace, they have a regional conference frequently, annually, and for the past 2 years, it's been in Ukiah, I think, the past 2 years.
Yes, this is our second annual meeting, get-together of the Northern Conference of Veterans for Peace. And we ranged all the way from all the way up to Eureka, to Sacramento, down to San Jose. There were representatives from San Francisco and Santa Rosa as well.
And it seems like Ukiah is a really likely place. It's centrally located for the region, and it's going to be again here next year, I assume?
We assume. We're still trying to work with the Board of Supervisors as to finding a legitimate and fair price. You know, a lot of people have spoken out against are using the hall. You know, Veterans for Peace has run up against opposition by our local American Legion, as well as the veterans of foreign wars. For some reason they have this misconception that we're not a veterans group. I don't know if they're confusing that with what is Voters for Peace. If you go online and look up VFP, you'll find not only Veterans for Peace, but you'll find Voters for Peace. And the confusion comes about also due to the fact that not all of our members are veterans. We have something that is similar to what most veterans organizations have, and that's an auxiliary, where people, family members, and those that have care and concern and actually live with the veterans or our partners or, you know, are affected by war in one way or another, want to be involved in what goes on. And Veterans for Peace really is the other side of the story when it comes to talk about war. You know, the fact that it's not as glorious as everyone might want to make it out to. There are organizations that are all about waving flags and patriotism and being all American, but when it comes to the reality of war, there are a lot of us that cannot sit silently while this continues to go on. We seem to accept war in our society a lot more than is healthy for our economy, as well as our returning vets and kids that are about to go out to war.
Well, I certainly hope this gets straightened out, because you are a Vietnam vet and seriously wounded, and you carry those wounds with you to this day.
Absolutely. Every day I have to deal with it. In fact, I couldn't attend all of the different meetings there during this weekend, but I was there long enough to have met some different leaders that have something to say about the relationships between themselves and the American Legion, for example. I met Bob Greiner, I think his name is, from San Francisco. And at first they had trouble using their hall there in San Francisco, but through a lot of negotiations and speaking with them, they not only are now able to use the hall at no expense, just like the VFW and the American Legion, but they work alongside and with the American Legion as far as having an outreach for veterans. So there's a lot to be gained by a partnership with other veterans organizations. And I think that all of our stories have a lot in common. It's just that we are willing to go against the common flow of what is spoken, government speech, you know, and war speech and all of that.
Well, this the building is actually owned by the county, and they ended up having to compromise with you. Some of the really hardcore characters over there didn't want Veterans for Peace to be able to use the building at all. But some of them, I guess, thought you could use it if you paid full price, and the county kind of came up with a compromise where you're getting a discount. You still have to pay for it, but you're getting a discount. And I understand the conference came up $75 short this time, and had there not been that tariff for the building, you would have actually made some money for your modest treasury for next year.
Yeah, that's a real shame, too, because that doesn't have to be. We should be considered to be just the same as any other veterans organization because, as I said before, we are made up of veterans primarily. There are people within the organization that are not veterans, but they are considered to be associate members, and they have done a lot of wonderful work for and with us. And I want to remind you that the Disabled American Veterans, which I am also a member, I'm a lifetime member of the Disabled American Veterans, they have an auxiliary, and they're a very important part. And I get a magazine every few months from the DAV, and it points out all of the great work that their auxiliary has done. We're pretty much a solid unit of people that work together, but only the members, not the associate members, but only the members have a say. So we work mostly locally here with local issues. We don't go outside of that. There's a lot of infighting that goes on with the Veterans for Peace. It's a real challenge to be peaceful sometimes, but the national organization is the one that really has the biggest say so about different policies and things that go on.
And the group Veterans for Peace is actually run by veterans, as you mentioned, because the voting, the national voting, is done by veterans, not associates. So check it out. The vets building here in Ukiah, the Boy Scouts are allowed to use it for free, right?
I didn't know that. I don't know, but I'll take
that's
the word. You know a lot of things that I don't, because I know, Annie, you've worked alongside of other Veterans for Peace.
Well, I happen to be married to an associate. Who
yes, you do, a very fine member that I don't think our local organization could do without. He's a real shaker and mover, Steve Scalamini. I always mispronounce that.
Me too.
Yeah.
But I'll tell him you said that. He'll be thrilled.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
So I do want to talk about the conference itself, but maybe a little bit about some of the things that your chapter 116 does the rest of the year. I know that there's been the Boonville Vets for Peace and probably everybody else, too, involved in depleted uranium munitions, trying to campaign against that.
Yes, yes.
And then I had also heard you speak out against the corporate partnership that the city of Ukiah was trying to establish with Honeywell Corporation for a while. I think they have now discarded that great idea. But there were a lot of problems with the proposal on the projects themselves and on Honeywell's track record with organizing these kind of projects. But you've had another problem as well.
Well, yeah. The official reason that the council voted against it was because Honeywell didn't have any skin in the game. Originally, they said that they would put up some money to guarantee that this would be done at a certain price. But then when it came down to the final meetings, they said that they would not be willing to do that. When I first showed up there, I don't know if everybody was on the same page as far as Honeywell and their track record and the fact that they have been known to be war profiteers and alongside with Halliburton and Bechtel. But they were in the business for a long time, and so I hear that they may still be, but making cluster bombs and whatnot, and I have a real problem with that, with all war profiteers, people that are in the business of figuring out ways to kill human beings. I've had a belly full of war, and I have some very strong feelings about it, and the different people that profit from the insanity that goes on every day in the name of Americans. So, there was one person, Phil Baldwin, had mentioned that, oh, no, originally I was against it for those same reasons. And so, but the council, it's really important for people to get to these meetings if they have problems with what's going on or to even find out what is going on. But they were going to sell us a bunch of water meters that are overdue and outdated. But I had questioned as to not only the fact that I was against any our local government doing anything with an organization like that or a company like that, that there weren't other bids, there weren't other corporations, that the outreach was really between the city manager and Honeywell. I was disappointed that we didn't have more bids from more people.
Local contractors are really angry.
Well, yeah. And there are ways of installing this system which anyone can really buy. It's just they wanted to take the whole thing and they wanted to put it in a kitchen at the Civic Center. And they had all these great plans that reached over $33 million. And I, for one, wondered where we were going to get all that money when people are having a hard time putting food on the table around here. And yet we've got a city council that was actually very, very much considering going ahead with this project. So, yeah, we need to get out there and let people know that a lot of this stuff is not okay with the majority of people in this town or the people that really care about war.
Yeah, I know that you did get some people saying, well, that's something they used to do and they don't do it anymore. But we actually covered this story in our Mendocino Country Independent. So here's what I found out on the Internet to kind of feed that into the story about, well, so what are they doing? Of course, they're not making napalm to drop in Vietnam anymore. But Honeywell did manufacture cluster bombs, missile guidance systems, napalm, and landmines during the Vietnam War. But because there were protests about it, Honeywell separated out its military contract into a new company called Alliant Tech Systems, and they did that as late as 1990. Alliant morphed into Honeywell Federal Manufacturing and Technologies, which operates a Kansas City plant producing and assembling most of the non-nuclear components of nuclear bombs. Mm. Now, these are the non-nuclear components, but they are for bombs. Honeywell is also licensed to convert natural uranium into UF6 for nuclear fuel. This is more military stuff they're doing right now. Honeywell runs the only facility in the U.S. that does this. In March of this year, 2012, Honeywell was fined, this was 2011, Honeywell was fined $11.8 million by the EPA, that's the United States Environmental Protection Agency, for knowingly storing hazardous waste without a permit. The defendants, this is a quote from the EPA, the defendants' illegal storage practices put employees at risk of exposure to radioactive and hazardous materials. And this is a quote of Cynthia Giles in a press release from March of last year from the EPA. So, and Honeywell has a long record of pollution and fines with the EPA. So you can see all of this about the nuclear fuel. They're still very much a military contractor.
Right. Thank you, Annie, for bringing that up. I know you mentioned that to me before, and I'm glad that you have that research there to back it up. You think we have problems with Walmart?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We could have had Walmart and Honeywell.
Yeah. This has got a lot more gravitas to it.
So do you want to talk a little bit about this weekend? It was...
it was great. I like I said, I met some really interesting people. I think... Every one of them that I met was a veteran and had seen combat. Most of the people there were Vietnam vets, but we had a young man speak that was from the Iraq Veterans Against the War Occupy and the his work with the Occupy movement, Aaron Hind. He was there with his beautiful young son. I don't know how old he was, about 10 or so, I don't know. But he was very, very articulate, very smart young man, and said some wonderful things that let us know that even the youth are still there with us. We just don't see them very often, but they have a lot of strong feelings about the war and what it's done to them and their families. It's maybe time will take care of that. It took me a long time to become a member of Veterans for Peace.
Right,
I started off on the peace vigils and trying to get myself calm enough to be able to protest without, disturbing my own inner peace. I had to really get peaceful with myself before I could stand for peace. You know, people would come by and honk and say, kill them all, and say some pretty bad things, raising fewer than one finger. You know, there's either a peace sign or a vulgar response to our being there, which is, of course, we have the ability to do that, but I believe a responsibility to stand up and speak out against things that are wrong that go on in this country, and I'm very proud to be an American that does do that. But like I say, it was a challenge at first. And,
Sure,
I met the Veterans for Peace, I met Steve and the banners and everything, and slowly got myself into a membership there because of the great work that I found later that they do.
Yeah, and the Iraqi veteran against the war that was at the conference, Aaron Hind, he also is a member of Veterans for Peace. His primary IVAW, Iraq Vets Against the War, you have to be a post 9/11 soldier who had seen action, I guess, to belong to that. But he also agrees that you need to engage in peace, wage peace.
Yes.
it was interesting. I was there when he talked. he talked about something you just touched on, how hard it is for people who have just gotten back to then turn right around and get involved in a peace movement, even though they're feeling in that way philosophically.
Oh, yeah.
They just want to forget everything. It's over with. They just want to go back and be normal and go to football games and movies and not even think about what they've been through. And so that's kind of a challenge to organize the Iraqi vets.
Yeah, well, to truly understand that, there's a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, that is going on with the troops. And a lot of us would take to the mountains, get to the hills, and resign ourselves due to our own depression about, you know, the issues that come up, this anger and this violence that is still in us when we come home and not knowing what to do with it, having relationships that fall apart and alcoholism and drugs. And I've done my share of all of that. But it was only until my later years that I was able to, you know, go to the meetings of fellow vets, you know, down there at the Veterans Clinic and work with Paul Otto down there and other veterans. A lot of veterans have dual memberships. They're not exclusively with the BFP. The gentleman that I spoke to that was in San Francisco, I believe he's the president, Bob Greeter, is also a dual member, and that actually helped him get the Veterans for Peace into the hall there, into the building, and have that wonderful cooperation that they now enjoy. A lot of it has to do with PTSD, whether or not veterans know they have it, if it's been diagnosed or are now in denial about it. The military has been really heavily frowning on any soldier coming back and admitting that they have PTSD, but it's an ongoing problem. And I definitely remember, and there still are veterans that are very much in the background and don't have it within themselves to speak out because they're there's so much of the depression that makes you want to isolate and find your cabin or your home or wherever and just withdraw and not speak to your family or escape through alcohol and drugs, as I also had mentioned before. I am not a success story.
I think you're definitely a success story. I had heard an exchange once, it wasn't this weekend, but somebody was asking an expert, you know, what is the percentage of soldiers coming back with PTSD? And he said, 100%.
Yeah.
You can't go through that
go through the horror of war without having it affect you in some way. I mean, those of us that really saw a lot of heavy combat really cannot get that out of our heads, even though we don't talk about it. It may come up in our dreams, not necessarily specific incidences of firefights and exchange with the enemy, but it can come up very symbolically as, you know, monsters coming after you or, you know, the recurring dreams that are very, very frightening that you may not even associate with it. But I don't think most people understand what post-traumatic stress disorder is, but it's something that's very important for us to all learn and get to know because it affects everyone that has a relationship with a returned soldier. I think it's one of the reasons that the war ended because so many mothers and fathers experienced what had happened to their sons and daughters after they had returned from war. And that will happen forever. As long as there's war, there will be damaged people. And we're very proud and we're very strong, but there's something that is hard to talk about, and that's what happens inside of ourselves and with our psyche and our levels of depression.
Unfortunately, we have this very dramatic example of that lately. The soldier that, I guess there was some kind of retaliation for a sort of a feud going back and forth in addition to the war where, you know, there was the urinating on the Korans and then there was some soldiers that were killed by Afghans in retaliation for that. And then you had this berserk situation where 17 civilians were just blammed.
The government had him go back for 4 tours. I don't know how much of that was voluntary, but it doesn't take very long for you to be affected by war in a negative way, and for him to have done 4 tours is just amazing. We saw a lot more intense combat more often, more frequently in Vietnam, but I will not downplay the what they have gone through with the IEDs in Iraq and the kind of horror that they have also experienced. I'm not going to to downplay that at all. They've seen a lot and probably too much. I think if anybody sees, well, I won't pursue that any further, but yeah, I've seen some pretty horrific things, and I'm sure they have as well. Yeah, the military can be a really messed up place to be.
Yeah, when it comes to that kind of shredding of bodies, it's very hard to say, well, this one was worse than that one. They're all totally unacceptable.
Yeah.
You mentioned something about the reason, part of this being the reason for the war ending, and that was another thing that Hind said, that he was having kind of a hard time organizing Iraqi vets because there's sort of this idea out there that, the war is over. But you don't really see that the war is over when you pick up the newspaper. What is your take on that?
Well, the war is not over. I mean, Vietnam may be long gone, but when I heard about Iraq was going to happen, I knew that was wrong. That was a wrong war. That was a war of choice, and it disturbed me greatly that our troops, our young people, were going to be getting into another situation that is government-made. It is well known now that there was a great conspiracy behind our getting involved with that particular war. And every war that happens affects me greatly. I've been fortunate enough to have been invited by our local school system, and I've spoken to classrooms in Willits and in Ukiah. The recruiters want to target the at-risk youth, the ones that are having trouble at home or have low finances or whatever. But David Spain's class had an assignment to read a book, a little paperback, and I was invited along with a nurse from Vietnam, and we shared our feelings. I hadn't met her before, but her feelings were the same as mine about war and how careful we must be to avoid at all costs any kind of conflict with another country, and becoming the police force for the rest of the world is not what we should be about. We've lost our treasure of young people, as well as our money. People don't talk about the economy and how the war has to, what the war has to do with that, the fact that our country is broke when more, I think it's 57% of our economy, our resources are spent on the military or war, or one thing or another, and only 4% of our economy is dedicated towards education. And that in itself is a crime, but people don't talk about it. People don't say, you know, that the war might be responsible for our problems with the economy. We look at other areas, you know, we look at the Wall Street and we look at the banks and the dirty guys that have stolen a lot of money through corruption. Really need to take a look at what the costs are. And we need to take another look at our priorities. I don't know if I want to talk about Obama right now, but there's been...
I was going to ask you about that.
Well,
I understand.
Don't we feel betrayed by the fact that he said one thing and now he's not really fulfilling all of his promises very well, is he?
Yes, you mentioned earlier that there's controversies within the Veterans for Peace group itself. Of course, there's controversies in every group.
Yep.
And I guess one of the things that was kind of contentious this weekend had to do with the issue of whether the Vets for Peace should react to Obama the same way they did to Bush with a move to impeach, you know, or a campaign to impeach because of the warmongering that's yep. going on in both cases. How did that play out?
Well, that's a pretty dicey situation, and a lot of people are up in arms. I just found out about it at this Northern Coast Conference that the national organization of the VFP had put forth a resolution that Obama be impeached. And that kind of stunned me a little bit because it seems I'm in great fear that if you talk about the guy that we have in office, that might somehow strengthen the right wing, which is a real – you want to talk about nightmare there. I would love to get the message across to Obama that he really needs to live up to all of his campaign promises and somehow get that home without the risk of giving strength to the opposition, which is really, really scary.
Yeah, okay, so I guess that'll be a conversation that'll be going on for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, within the VFP, we're not all just happy campers, all getting along and agreeing on everything. We have a very healthy discussion about what goes on locally. That's what the VFP 116, our local group, does. We're pretty much only involved with local issues and don't have mm-hmm. a say as to whatever else goes on. And I have a problem with that, and I will be discussing that, as I have in the past, with our local chapter. the words that we have and our vote and our feeling, and right now it's limited to officers that actually vote on certain issues, but I've been known to shake the cage of the VFP from time to time to make sure that, you know, we may not be officers, but we surely have something to say about what goes on, whether or not it's in line with the philosophy of the, you know, the general purpose of peace.
Certainly, you pay your dues, literally, for that.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. I'm only about halfway through all the information I wanted you to give us on. Are you able to stay for a while longer?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I'd be happy to.
Oh, why don't we take a little music break? Peter Tracy sang this weekend at
he was wonderful. He's great. Yeah, one of the lyrics he said was talking about the VFP. He said, "We're not very pretty and we're not very stable." And then he goes on with the rest of his song, but it's just one of
Did
the lyrics.
Did you relate to that? I think you're pretty and stable. Anyway.
Well, that's just, don't tell anybody I said that.
Okay. So I have a CD from Peter Tracy. He's a vet for peace. I think he's an associate member, and he's from Sonoma County, I believe.
Yeah, so he's a wonderful guy.
He's a neighbor. So, and we were just speaking about Washington, D.C., and he has a song on his CD called Send Your Balls to Congress Because They Need Them. So I thought that might fit in right here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk some more about the conference.
Great. Thank you, Annie.
Let's send some balls to Congress, they can't find theirs anywhere. Look around in your garage for any you can spare. Basketballs, tennis balls, any old balls will do. Find your balls and end this war, it's why we elected you. Let's send some balls to Congress, we need to help them out. Help them to remember what their job is all about. Maybe they can take a hint and stop funding this war. If not, then next November they won't work for us no more. The people want impeachment as if you didn't know. It ain't too late to start, it should have been done long ago. The people want impeachment, but all you do is stall. So go and check your mail today and try to find your balls. Maybe they need hearing aids, let's send some right away. They don't seem to be listening to what the people say. We elected you to end this war, what don't you understand? The last thing the people want is a new war with Iran. You've taken all the time our patience will allow. It's time to cut the funding and bring our troops home now. Let's send along a compass, 'cause they really lost their way. Otherwise we wouldn't still be in Iraq today. So find your balls and listen to this message loud and clear. And if you still can't find your balls, then find a new career.
Okay, that was Peter Tracy, Send Your Balls to Congress, because they apparently don't have enough of them.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Mendocino Country Independent monthly newspaper that comes out covering local issues, and we have in the studio with us Sandy Hill, who's a veteran for peace, and was at the conference in Ukiah that was held over the weekend, and it was really quite a successful conference. I heard nothing but praise about the content and everything, and we thought we would hang in here a little longer and talk about some more of the things that came down. One of the things you were just saying is that the Veterans for Peace, they're really in the vanguard. What do you mean?
Well, you know, you've got the American Legion, and we have all of the other very patriotic organizations that will speak the government line and explain war as being very patriotic in one thing or another. But the Veterans for Peace have been known to stick their necks out real far compared to other organizations and discuss things. Like locally, we have our claim to fame is the ban on depleted uranium munitions that is going on. I didn't know what DU was when I first met these folks from the VFP. But locally, our chapter has been involved with sending a petition, getting names. And if you haven't signed a petition, please do. I don't know how I can get it to you, but you can ask me. I'll try to keep one in my car if you ever run into me, those of you that know who I am. But depleted uranium is a resource for the military. It happens to be the hardest substance known to man, short of a diamond. But as far as metal, there's nothing stronger, and it's used in projectiles, whether it be anti-tank weapons or bunker busters or whatever have you. By itself, the depleted uranium does not pose a significant hazard. It's only when it is exploded, it creates uranium oxide, which is highly toxic and gets into your blood system. And the people that have to live in the areas where depleted uranium have lived have suffered just tremendous abnormalities with their newborns, lots of mutations and lots of sickness, and that's going to stay. Just like in Vietnam, the people there still have to live with the Agent Orange that we left for them. I was exposed to Agent Orange, but I don't think I have anything that's related to that. My major problem is with gunshot wounds. However, I did have osteomyelitis, which could be an irritant for the ones that I had. But the Veterans for Peace are so important because we're the guys that will go out and point out the fact that there's a toxic dump where soldiers are burning toxic waste and coming home sick. We'll be the ones to talk about what was that sickness, Gulf War.
Gulf War Syndrome.
Yeah, Gulf War Syndrome, yeah.
That's a name that doesn't mean anything, right?
No, it doesn't. Well, we finally figured it out, and a lot of it has to do with the inoculations that the soldiers were getting. It's a very real thing. It came out in, I'm very proud to say, that the disabled American veterans had, I was sent an article that said that Gulf War Syndrome is a very real thing, and it had to do with anthrax inoculations and other chemical weapons, you know, inoculations that were given to soldiers, and the soldiers had nothing to say about it. They just stood in line and got the shots and got sick later on. But if you're going to find somebody that's going to speak out about it, it's going to be the courage of the men and women with the Veterans for Peace and other like organizations. Mm-hmm. We have a, if you go online and look up VFP, you'll also find Voters for Peace. I don't know, did I already mention this? But Voters for Peace might be confused with VFP. That might be why our local chapter thinks that we're not a group of veterans.
That's not why.
Well, yes.
It's the third word that they don't like.
Yeah, I'd like to give people the
benefit of
the
doubt. I've heard some of them rant and rave about it.
It's pretty sad. We're all brothers in arms, whether we like it or not, and we have all been affected by it. And I've gone to a psychiatrist that explained it to me, you know, why do we see people have such extreme views after returning from the war? And he bluntly told me that a lot of guys will become hyper-patriots. You know, they'll wave the flag and they'll join the American Legion and say, you know, and have all of these really, what I consider to be at times ugly sentiments that they throw out there. And, you know, our country, right or wrong, and they'll march at the front of the line in the 4th of July parade. But there is also a group of people, like for myself, the first firefight that I was involved in, I saw the insanity of war. I had thought that I was being noble and willing to give my life for my country by getting involved in Vietnam, but I didn't know anything about it before I left. There weren't counter-recruiters, and that's why I'm now a counter-recruiter and going to different schools. But the VFP, I see them as a vanguard, and not always correct and not always on the money with some of their views, but there's room to challenge that. But we're going to be the guys that go out there and look out for the veterans, for the guys that are in combat today. We will speak out about some of the horrors and preventable things that happen to the soldiers nowadays. This is not necessary. I challenge anybody to tell me why we are in Afghanistan right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sending your cards and letters.
I have no idea. Except everybody else has been there. So
we got Bin Laden, who was in Pakistan, and there's a lot of behind that. But I don't know. We got the bad guys and buried them at sea, so nobody would know anything about anything. But we're still there, and young men and women and civilians in that country are dying daily, and some of it is through our hand. And we need to take responsibility for that. If you're not saying anything or speaking out against it, you're actually helping the enemy, I think. We need to challenge this stuff. And every American has the right and obligation to do so. We need to follow up, let our congressman know. One of the speakers there at our conference happened to be a very, very savvy politician that I give full praise to, and that was what's his name? Sam.
I don't know.
Oh,
Sam.
Come on.
Oh, somewhere around here.
There was one of the politicians that was there.
Oh well, there was two. You actually had two candidates.
I'm sorry. Here we go. Norman Solomon, who I met when I went to see another film with Phil Donahue over. I was lucky enough this year to meet Cindy Sheehan as well as Phil Donahue and the film that he was promoting. But Norman Solomon was there and really spoke more clearly and I hate to say he was anti-establishment, but against the current flow of war. The fact that we have a war mentality, he was able to and willing to say that Dennis Kucinich was someone that he had met and admires, but he really echoed a lot of Kucinich's stance and anti-war sentiment. So he's the guy. He didn't politic or he didn't say anything about his campaign. Really, he addressed what issues. He addressed foreign policies and domestic emergencies and the cost of war at home. Uh-huh. So he was one of the people that addressed the issue of our economy and what it's costing us to go to all these places to do whatever it is that we say we're doing. But there are a lot of war profiteers that need to be shut down, and I think our government has been complacent in that area.
I think, it was pretty extraordinary that at this conference you actually had two congressional candidates there, and they did not, as you said, do any campaigning out of respect for, the group not getting involved in something extraneous. Yeah. But John Llewellyn from Anderson Valley, he talked about peace conversion of the economy and society, and Norman Solomon, foreign policies and domestic emergencies, as you said.
Right. John Llewellyn happens to be the president of VFP 116. He lives up in Garberville. We only have four members here in town. We have Jamie Connerton, we have Steve Scalmanini, and Richard Hinker, and myself. But we have people, like I said, in Wallala and in Fort Bragg and just all over the place. But he's the northernmost representative up there in Laytonville. Or is it Garberville?
I think that John Llewellyn lives in Anderson Valley.
Oh, that's right. He just moved.
I think you might be thinking of of the guy with the golden rule.
Oh, no. Freddie
Champagne.
No. That's
because he's from Garberville.
Yes, I know that. But I thought John was up north, too. I have a feeling he moved recently. And then there's Bob Wilkerson. I think he's up north.
He's in Willits.
He's in Willits.
He actually was in Laytonville and then moved to Willits about a year ago, I think.
Yeah, but really solid people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel real good about all of those folks.
Yeah, and I just mentioned the golden rule. Freddie Champagne, he's always had a Veterans for Peace bus, and he took kids to Cuba to play baseball with the Cubans and did all kinds of really pretty interesting things. And right now he's had a campaign to refurbish this boat that was used to harass nuclear testers that were working in the Pacific, and to try to put their bodies in the way to prevent the testing. And so this is a civil disobedience boat, and I guess he found it at the bottom of the wharf and dredged it up. And
originally it was used to protest the nuclear bombings in some of the islands, far off islands in the South Seas. It was present and a protest ship. It's a tiny little thing, but they're talking about restoring it and going out and trying to raise awareness all over the place, all the way up and down the coast, the East Coast, all over, up and down South America, and up some of the major rivers, the Mississippi River, all the way out to Hawaii. But I don't know. I think it's a little too small a boat for me to hop on.
But it'll be it'll sail in protest again, no doubt.
Yeah, it's good work. And another thing too, I wanted to point out that I mentioned before that I'm relatively new with the Veterans for Peace, but a lot of great work had been done earlier. They had a bus called the White Rose, and it had gone down to Louisiana after Katrina. And were great at distributing much-needed supplies and money and whatnot. They were, I think, Roger Moore had told people that if they wanted to...
Michael Moore.
Roger Moore, that's the James Bond, never
mind. Him too.
But Michael Moore had suggested that people donate money to the Veterans for Peace, Chapter 116, because we were down there and we were high profile. And I really, hats off to all the guys that did all of that work. Like I say, wasn't there for all of that, but really proud of the work that the VFP has done down there. And really, it was like a war zone down there, and people needed things. And VFP is a very, very much a humanitarian organization, and I take pride in that.
That's another Vanguard story too, Sandy, because that bus was equipped with a satellite.
Yeah.
And there they were in the middle of this stricken area. They were on their way to, I think, to Washington D.C. when the hurricane hit. So they just went to Louisiana instead.
Right. They took a detour.
And they had their bus there, and the Red Cross was using their satellite to get out.
Wow!
So they were like communication central there. It was
amazing. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, it's, I think somebody in Laytonville now has the White Rose, and I think it needs some repairs.
There are a lot of miles on that old war horse.
Something else I wanted to ask you about, because you're talking about being the vanguard of the Veterans for Peace, and you are certainly going to be at the vanguard of fighting the neocons who want to have a war with Iran right now.
Yeah, that's scary stuff, isn't it?
Was that something that you talked about this weekend?
I don't recall. I was in and out. I was not able to go to all of the events, and I was hoping that you would fill in that blank. I don't know if that was addressed or not, but if it wasn't, it should have been. I would think that it must have been. Very scary stuff. We're being fed a lot of stuff. How much of it's propaganda and how much of it is fact, I really don't know. But that's a real... real bunch of matches in a room full of gasoline, that whole situation. I trust that our fearless leader, Obama, has been doing the right thing and talking. He's a great orator. Of all of his other flaws and shortcomings, he has been able to be quite an ambassador for our country with regards to keeping us from getting into things that are highly volatile. I'm willing to bet that he has done a lot of good work for America in that response. But, what a terrible thing that would be. You read the prophecies in the Bible, and they say, not that I'm a Christian or a religious person at all, they say this planet will go down in flames, that we'll all just disappear due to something. We're supposed to get involved with a surprising ally, someone that was a former memory of enemy. And I don't know, I shouldn't even get into that. I don't know too much about it. But the apocalypse could very well, I won't pursue that much longer, but it's a very frightening prospect that we would get involved with Iran after the terrible things that went down in Iraq and now in Afghanistan. We need to start spending money on our own issues, getting our own country healthy and strong, our children better educated, the schools being funded. We don't need to keep spending our vast treasure on weapons and war and killing. It's just not healthy.
Yeah, it's really hard to see how we're going to turn this around. But you look at the Occupy movement, and you really start to feel hopeful. People are in motion, and the Iraqi vet for war, who was from the Bay Area that spoke at the conference, is very much involved with the Occupy movement. And in fact, he said they don't really have a top-down structure for their chapter. They do more like horizontal organizing, he said. They email each other back and forth, and they show up at an Occupy thing.
Scott Olson was shot in the head by a beanbag and seriously injured, and he was a veteran for peace. He and his roommate were veterans for peace, and wow, when your own people, when you're the people that are supposed to protect and serve start firing on us, there's something very wrong with our system. And one of the speakers did talk about that at the closing on our last day. We was talking about the Occupy movement and how law enforcement agencies have been contacted and instructed to attack and arrest people that are activists. Obviously, the VFP is an activist organization, so we've been targeted as well as other activists have been targeted. It's a really frightening thing that in this country of free people, free and peaceful and loving people, there are those that would take arms against our own civilians.
Yeah, and that kind of thing reminds me a little bit of the Bradley Manning situation. And there was a Marine, an ex-Marine there, Jeff Patterson, who talked a lot about that case. And he was very eloquent. He said that in the press, all the headlines are disgruntled homosexual strikes back and all this kind of stuff by giving out this very interesting information about how our military really works and how our government really works. It was just really things that we need to know. He even quoted a headline from a British paper, Mad Fag Revenge was the name of that. And so he really made it crystal clear that Bradley Manning released this, and he made a statement that this is information that the public needs to know in order to be able to make meaningful decisions, and that's why he did it. And so that kind of was so much going on there. It was great. And so we did talk about all these dramatic stuff, but also there probably must have been a lot of more mundane things about how you keep your organizing alive and the homeless vets. What do you do to support each other? Is there anything else you want to add about all of this?
Well, no, I personally know a lot of people that have just wonderful hearts, and they're very much in line with a humanitarian effort. You know, the way that they made a detour from Washington to Louisiana really shows what the VFP is made of. And I think we need to encourage that and embrace that. And not because I chose to be a member of that organization as well as the Disabled American Veterans, but the fact that sometimes you just got to get down to doing the right thing. And that's what I sort of posed to our city council most recently with getting involved or not getting involved with Honeywell. You know, sometimes you just have to break it down to doing the right thing. And there are certain people you don't want to do business with. And there are those that are the enemies of America. And they happen to be in very high places and doing some pretty evil things in the name of America. And I just want to let people know I don't want to have anything to do with it. Don't put my name on that brand of ideology.
Well, okay, Sandy Hill, thank you so much. I hope next year they have the Veterans for Peace Conference, regional conference here again, and you'll come back and we can, well, I hope you come back before then.
Well, great, Annie. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on and having a chance to speak. I think I got through this time without having my blood pressure raised. I was on once before. I was pulled off of the peace vigil.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I was full of emotion and anger. But, thank you. It was nice speaking with you, especially someone that was there, you know, at the conference and could fill in all the blanks. So you made it very easy for me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sandy, so much. Sandy Hill with the Veterans for Peace. We've got a couple announcements here. there's going to be an all-humanity march in solidarity with Jamal Andrews and Trayvon Martin here in Ukiah. I guess people may or may not have been following the Jamal Andrews case. He was murdered in Redwood Valley by a neighbor, and it's a horrible, horrible thing. A young father with a seven-month-old kid, it's just really ghastly. The suspect, Billy Norbury, will be in court on April 10th. Courtroom B at 1:30, and go early because that little courtroom gets packed real quick. And then in light of what just happened, the young black man who was shot to death for walking down the street, there's a local group called Conversations on Race and Privilege that grew out of Ukiah Aware, and they're organizing around that. It's an all-humanity march. It's going to be on Saturday, March 31st, last day of the month. All Humanity March in solidarity with Jamal Andrews and Trayvon Martin. And the group will peacefully declare our right to live safely in a diverse community. It's going to be Saturday, March 21st at noon in the Alex Thomas Plaza. So that's a good local response. Then we also have our Occupy Mendocino and Occupy Ukiah people working very hard on the foreclosure issue, and on Tuesday tomorrow at 3 p.m., the Board of Supervisors will be taking up that issue to find out what the options the county might have in the way of getting a moratorium on foreclosures until there can be an audit done to look into the extensive fraud that they found in all of these cases. And I think 80% of the foreclosures in San Francisco were fraudulent, 84%, and 90-something percent had questionable situations around them. I'm going to play now a speech by Judy Berry. The film Who Bombed Judy Berry that was put together by Daryl Cherney is going to be showing here in Willits April 4th and 5th at the Noyo Theater. Again, Willits at 7 p.m. And this is Judy talking about how the government kind of brings down groups, and watch out, Vets for Peace, because you're probably infiltrated.
What they did to us was, the term for this in the FBI is COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program. And what that means, this is a program that was started by J. Edgar Hoover back in the bad old days, and now in the bad new days, they still do it. And COINTELPRO, that J. Edgar Hoover described, it's a way of targeting domestic radical groups that they think are a threat to the U.S. government. So I guess that's quite a compliment to us, and I guess we're a threat to Charles Hurwitz, and he's more powerful than the government, so maybe it all adds up. But anyway, what J. Edgar Hoover described COINTELPRO as a program, these are his words, to expose, misdirect, isolate, and neutralize political groups that he didn't like. And that's really what's been done to Earth First. And the methods that they used in COINTELPRO include disinformation, fake documents, infiltration, agent provocateurs, fomenting infighting within a group, getting the group to do things so that they will be discredited, and also framing and assassinating leaders. And the most famous victims of COINTELPRO, you probably all know that Martin Luther King was spied on in his motel room, and that, you know, of course, in the Black Panthers, there were many Panthers killed, 32 in all. Fred Hampton was a famous victim of COINTELPRO. He was murdered in his bed. Geronimo Pratt is one that's still in jail now, 26 years later, something like that, really a very long time. And he, in fact, was framed by the very same guy, Richard Held, the same guy that was in charge of our case at the FBI was in charge of Geronimo's case down in Los Angeles. And what they did, and of course Leonard Peltier is another very well-known victim of COINTELPRO. And what they did in these cases, I actually brought you some examples to show you. They did the exact kind of thing that I'm talking about. In the Black Panthers, they didn't just frame Geronimo. Before they framed him and put him in jail, they fomented infighting within the leadership so that people in the Black Panthers thought that Geronimo was an FBI agent, so that when he was then framed, the other Panthers wouldn't testify in his behalf. And one of the ways that they fomented this infighting is that they had these like nasty cartoons. Now, the FBI doesn't make up the divisions in your group. They take real divisions and they kind of fan the flames of them. So there was another group, a black nationalist group, as opposed to a black revolutionary group, which was the Panthers was. And the other group was called United Slaves, or US, U.S. And the leader of the United Slaves was named Karenga. So what they did is they had these cartoons. And these cartoons were sent from one faction to the other and back and forth, cartoons, death threats, and insulting letters. And each faction thinking that the cartoons and letters were from the other faction, and they were all from the FBI until everybody, well, actually, there were actually two Panthers killed in the fighting that resulted from this, which they considered a great success. So eventually, COINTELPRO was exposed. And it was exposed not because of anything the U.S. government did, but because in 1971, some people, we know not who, broke into the FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania, and liberated the files. And and back then, they used to be very open. They called it COINTELPRO. They said, we have an order to neutralize Huey Newton. They even had an order to neutralize Tom Hayden. And hey, didn't they do it? They got these files, about 10,000 pages of them, and they went through them and they exposed this just really horrible program. And it took them 4 years to get a congressional hearing, but they eventually got a congressional hearing in the Senate before Senator Church. It was called the Church Committee, and this was in 1975. And at that time, they ruled, the U.S. Senate Committee ruled, that COINTELPRO was illegal, that it violated basic constitutional rights of U.S. citizens. And as a result of this, you may have heard of the Attorney General guidelines. This is what's kind of being undermined by the counterterrorism bill. So they passed these things called the Attorney General guidelines, and they set rules for the FBI and what they could and couldn't do. And what they said they couldn't do is they cannot spy on people, they cannot harass people, they can't engage with people because of political activities. That's what they're banned from doing. They're only allowed to investigate crime. They're not allowed to investigate radical political groups or any political groups. And they are allowed to investigate a group if the group is a terrorist group. And yet what we've found in our case is that, you know how with the forestry rules, they have all these forestry rules, you know, so that we have the strongest rules in the United States and all that stuff, but they do this little dance around the rules and they still cut down every tree in the forest. Well, the FBI does the exact same thing with the Attorney General guidelines, okay? They do this little dance around them, but they still manage to do whatever they feel like. And what we found out in the bombing case and in 1990, what we've been learning ever since, is that really what they've been doing to Earth First is exactly the kind of COINTELPRO that they did to the Panthers, that they did to AIM, not quite on the same scale. They haven't killed 32 of us. But nonetheless, the same methodologies that they used against the Panthers and AIM and all of those other groups are the same methodologies that they've used to try to isolate and neutralize and misdirect Earth First.
And that's the unforgettable Judy Berry, and now it's Judy the Movie is out. It's going to be again in Willits Noyo Theater, April 4th and 5th at 7 p.m., and it's also playing in other places. It's been all over the country. April 7th, it'll be at the Davis Film Festival, and April 8th at the Oakland International Film Festival, and then it's going to be back in the courtroom in Oakland on April 12th, a hearing to get evidence back from the FBI in that case. Still happening. So this is KMEC LP in Ukiah. Stay tuned for some great music coming up with Reverend Jim very shortly. We're going to go out of this section of KMET programming, which is the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour, with some Alira Rose. Alira Rose is one of the three fantastic women who showed up to put together a happy birthday program for our newspaper, which is celebrating its first year under women ownership. And Alira Rose, we had Ma, we had Sherry Glazer herself, the goddess herself, and we had La Tigresa doing Echo Erotica. And those two women were a big hit, and so was singer-songwriter Alira Rose. Thank you.